This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Make me sound so mean when you talk about me, but from everything I've seen, you don't know the first thing about me. I've heard all your reasons, I've taken your advice like a
fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is that time of the week, everybody. Your old friend Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from the cozy confines of Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. I know what you've been doing all week long. Since last Wednesday, you've been wading knee-deep through MySpace pages, scrolling through your iTunes, watching Letterman, some band comes on and plays something, and you just feel hollow. You're like, should I care? Should I run out and buy this thing? What direction do I go? What does it all mean? What is the course? Someone show the way. Well, that's what we do here on the podcast. We are, as we like to say, the lighthouse in the fog, the podcast guiding you in your chaotic music life. Well, folks, it is always a thrill when our guest that is with us today joins us. He comes to us off the road from Jack Ingram's Beat Up Ford Band, where it has been, what, 15 years?
15 years.
Drummer of Jack Ingram and the Beat Up Ford Band, the great Pete Coatney is here.
Hey, Phil.
How you doing, Pete?
I'm doing great. It's great to be back here with you guys.
Man, we got a great response from Pete's last lone appearance on the podcast. He told the great story of the time y'all opened for the Rolling Stones.
That's right.
In Canada. The time you met Johnny Cash in Chicago.
Absolutely.
I can't remember what episode was that. Maybe 13 or 12 or so. Check the Pritchett archives. Go back and listen to Pete's first appearance on the podcast. Well worth your time. Some great stories there. Well, well, well. You guys been on the road a lot lately.
We have.
Jack's got a new record out there pounding away.
That's right.
Touring with Gary Allen, looks like, this fall a lot.
Coming up in November and December.
Is that right? Yes. Yeah. All over the country or just regionally?
No, pretty much all over the country, and then into Canada.
And Eli Young on some of those dates as well?
Eli Young will be joining us on those dates, I believe, on all of those dates.
Is that so?
Coming to a theater near you.
Coming to a theater near you.
Well, man, we've known Eli Young for a long time. I was a little, you know, had the new guys in the band come in. We played some show, some festival. And Eli Young, now they get the young crowd out.
Yeah,
Eli Young gets the screaming girls.
The young ladies.
Like, not really Pritchett, you know, I mean, we opened for Eli Young here at the, what's the big theater in Fort Worth up there? I just drew a blank. I don't want to say the Granada, that's not it.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I'm talking about, up there on Camp Bowie.
Yes.
The Ridgely Theater.
There you go.
Played the Ridgely Theater, big show. So I had my group of 40... middle-aged men who each came by themselves. They were there.
Yeah.
Make no mistake. And then just like 1,000 screaming 13-year-olds. And another time we played with them, they opened up the underside of their bus and brought out the weights, the Nautilus gear.
Oh, my gosh.
And we're out there. I'm not kidding, dude.
Well,
like curling and doing presses. And Stu and Blue had just joined the band, a couple of young guys, you know, at the time. They were like, what are those guys doing? I'm like, dude, they're, you know, this is how they roll. They're, well, I guess. I'd never seen it.
Let me tell you.
Do y'all travel with your own weights?
I think they've left the weights at home. I think they've started eating a little bit more.
Yeah, they put a little living on the road.
I mean, And I tell you, the girls are screaming for that drummer in that band, Chris. He's a cutie.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
And then you get close to Eli Young. Now, I don't know if this is fact or not, but someone once told me that, you know, it does look like they maybe put on the show makeup a little bit going on stage. Yeah. That's the rumor anyway.
Well,
I haven't been close enough.
I have not heard that rumor, and I don't want to comment on that because, you know, we gotta be out on the road with
them. Gotta be out on the road.
You know, I only want the positive things getting back to them. But,
well, the band picks up on some things sometimes and asks me and say, like, man, it looks like they're wearing some makeup or something. Well, or working,
you know,
out. I go, man, I really don't know, you know.
It is show business.
It's show business. That's what I said. I go, hey, I don't know.
Putting the show in show business.
That's right. Putting the show in show business.
Part of the deal.
Well, man, one thing that I think it gets lost in a lot of this, everyone gets so focused on, I'm making this album, man. I want to get on the road and all this, man. We're going to, you know, it's got to work at radio or it's not going to work, all this kind of stuff. But the real rubber meets the road comes when a guy like myself or you can keep things going, can keep the band out there, despite all the terrors that are headed your way. You know, someone quits, someone can't show up, someone misses a gig. Pete, I got to know Pete because you would sub in at the last minute for if I had a drummer not make it or something.
That's right.
Someone goes, call Cotney, man, he'll show up.
I go, or when someone,
we haven't practiced, he doesn't know any of the songs. Like, it doesn't matter, man, just get him in there, he'll play. So, and that's taught me a lot. And Pete would come in and play. And there's been a lot of guys who played in Jack's band and my band, or I'd call Jack, he'd say, man, call this guy if you need a bass player.
Yep.
It's crossed paths a lot. But that's a real art form. Guys, a lot of bands go down in flames when they say, well, we haven't played any gigs this year. Like, wait, well, what do you mean? Either they're like, well, our guitar player quit. I'm just like, God, man, come on, you got to keep going. You just got to, I don't know, play guitar yourself. Or
players are a dime a dozen. You can find somebody.
Find somebody. But we've had a couple guys cross paths. We've had, of course, Ingram's had. Now, you've been with Jack. He's been lucky to have a solid drummer like yourself for as long as he has.
That's right.
Isn't that right?
That's an unusual situation, I think, when somebody sticks around as long as I do.
That's right.
I don't know what that says about me exactly.
Well, it just means you're a stalwart. You're a lifer, Cotney.
Yeah, we've had guys come and go. We've had guys in and out on more than one occasion. I mean, two tenures.
Now, y'all have had a long stretches with... well, I guess guitar's been up and down, and bass has been
the one
Achilles heel.
Yeah.
Well, y'all had, of course, a lot of people will know Robert Kearns was with y'all on and off a lot.
A couple of different times.
He was a founding member of the Bottle Rockets. Is that right? Or played
with
them?
He's a founding member, but he was with them for a while. He was with them for about 5 years.
Bass player of the Bottle Rockets. Great, great Midwestern rock band.
That's right. And by the way, they have a brand new record out that just got a good review.
And Kearns was playing on it? Did he go back and do it with them?
No, he's not playing on it. But
he is now, of course, playing with Lynyrd Skynyrd.
That's right.
A little band.
Saw him last night on television.
What was it? He was on
on Conan.
On Conan.
That's right.
Kearns out there. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Yeah.
I'll never forget the time we were playing at Stubbs in Austin, and we played like one time with you guys somewhere.
Right.
And I met Robert, very quiet, very shy, and just, you know, hey, it's Robert, he's playing bass with now. I guess it's right after he just came on with you guys. So I'm in Austin at the hotel, and the phone rings, and what's going on? It's just loud, you know, just what's going on, baby? What time are you playing? And I'm just like, oh, we're playing at 10 o'clock. Hey, who is this? It's Robert. It's Robert. I'm just like, Robert. I'm looking at the band. Robert who? You know, just, Kearns, man. Jack Ingram's bass player. I don't know how he got my number or anything. He said, man, me and Bobby Bear out here on the town. You know.
Oh, boy.
Bobby Bear Jr., man. The great Bobby Bear Jr.
Absolutely.
Big fan of his stuff. So, yeah, we had a good show at Stubbs that night. And then, so Kearns and Bobby Bear Jr. just come busting through they're out in the crowd just in the pit, just running into people, having a wild night.
Yeah.
And climbed on the stage, and I sang, you know, much tougher with the band, and, you know, it was a gas, man. Loved it. The great Robert Kearns. Of course, he's calmed down a lot since then.
Oh, yes.
Barry has grown up quite a bit. He's very, very reticent, very professional. Of course, he always was professional. But Kearns is a great guy. We also had a... Pete once warned me when we played at the Aardvark, I had a bass player that I'd found in the newspaper. That, boy, I'd cobbled this deal together.
Oh, my.
had and Pete's like, well, who's this bass player you got? Who's this bass player? I was like, man, don't worry, man. He sent me his resume. Man, he went to North Texas. He teaches bass. And Pete just goes, oh, no, stay away from that right there.
That's a red
flag. Why would you say that?
Well, it seems to me that a lot of times when a guy is, now this is painting with a broad brush, but it seems that
that's what we do here.
The schooled players and those that teach a lot of times, they seem to be a bit. I don't know how to put it.
They're proud of their technique, maybe proud of their instrument.
Yeah, maybe a lot of times technique supersedes the ability to play with feel and abandon and a kind of a looseness that
rock and roll or country requires.
Yeah.
Well, sure enough, this guy showed up, nice guy. First thing he does is he gets backstage, he starts to take off his pants. And, well, he's not taking off his pants, he's just shifting his belt over to the side of his body. And I'm like, what are you doing there? He's like, so my belt buckle won't scratch my bass. So he does that, and he's got a couple of basses with him. And all of a sudden, and Pete's just over there in the corner just looking at me, just giving me the eye, shaking his head. Oh, boy. This guy's got the nine-string fretless bass.
A piece of furniture.
A piece of furniture for an amp, just gigantic. He's got a music stand with all of these charted out solos and stuff.
Yeah,
he's out there just goes, hey, man, do you like Victor Wooten's? Pete's just looking at it. I'm like, man, can you just go the one and the five, baby? Can you give me the one and the five? G, C, and D, follow me. You know?
Oh,
but,
my
man,
gosh.
Sure enough, he was just out there just switching basses between songs, going through the sheet music, you know? And Pete was just over there with a knowing look in his eye, and I felt defeated. And he said, man, when someone says, I teach bass or I went to music school to learn the bass, that's a red flag. More often than not, it's just not a the good bass players are kind of maybe a guitar player who now just kind of plays bass to pick up some gigs and just plays very simply, can maybe sing some harmony, you know.
Ron Wood. Great bass player.
Now, was he bassist for the Faces?
No, he played guitar for him, but he's played bass on so much stuff. And the stuff that he plays, the way he plays bass is just incredible.
Uh-huh.
Of course, Bill Wyman was a wonderful bass player.
Great player, yeah. Rolling Stones for you folks out there. Oh, man. Well, another guy we crossed paths with was our old friend Bobby Bellemans, Austin bass player.
Yes.
Same deal, man. Of course, you look into the one ads. Bass player available. You think about who's going to put an ad in there, but some guy looking for a gig who can teach, you know, some casual, laid back, cool dude's not going to put an ad in the paper, probably. More than likely.
No, I don't know.
But Bobby was an earnest sort, but and had played with a lot of guys like Junior Brown, Neil Young, Junior Brown, and Ian Moore.
He played with Junior Brown.
Yeah, he did for a while. And wow, Ian that. Moore, and he told me he played with Jack. He goes, man, I played with Jack.
Well, he did play with us. That is true. He did play with us.
And was a really good player, but same deal, though.
Just soloing through Beat Up Ford through the song. He wanted his own bass solo in that song. It was really interesting.
Just breaks out the violin bow on the 8-string bass.
Man.
Yeah. Well, it is an art form. Pete is a master of just picking up the gig. Everyone's like, man, Phil, where does your band practice? And I just laugh. I'm like, man, we don't practice. And man, I've played lots of shows with maybe you showing up on drums, a bass player out of the paper, and Reed Easterwood or Landis Armstrong, someone on guitar.
Yeah.
And just, man, every song just had blues in A or G, C, and D or 6-8, G, F, and C. And I would just play the simple songs and get through it, you know. But that strikes the fear into so many musicians. And if it really does, man, you really don't have much of a chance to keep it going. You kind of got to be able just to... Jack was that way. He could just kind of get through a show, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah. We cobbled together lots of shows just by picking somebody up to come out and play.
You remember just something really random, pulling up a guy, just out of the crowd, just to stand there with a bass?
Not as much out of the crowd, but we did have a couple of really, really interesting ones. One of the best ones we did was when we were still doing our Tuesday night stint at Adair's. We had Andy Timmons came out and played guitar.
Yeah, how do I know that name?
Well, he's a pretty well-known, like, excellent guitar player, and he's a shredder in his own right. But he's the example of one who was more than technically proficient, but also has
knew
the
how
taste
to fit in,
and you know he knows when to not play as much as he knows when to play.
Right.
He's a big Beatles fan, that's
sure.
So he he understands when to say when.
That's right.
but we had a bass player one time that came out and played one or two shows with us, and he was outstanding. The guy had wonderful taste.
Did you know him,
chop.
Or did Jack find him somewhere?
I don't know how we found this guy. And he had just this exceptional feel.
Yeah.
Like he'd played country music, like schooled on old school country. And this is like early on, like within the first few months of me playing with Jack.
Yeah.
And the guy was outstanding, but it was just a bizarre situation because he was older than us, really red-faced, really ruddy skin, and really white, cottony hair.
Yeah.
And,
but could just flow.
Oh, it just sounded great and felt great. But then he put on these white cotton gloves to like, load his stuff in and out. Yeah. It was kind of bizarre. I mean, like, probably, like, anal retentive beyond.
Yeah. He wouldn't play with the gloves on, though.
No, he didn't. No, that.
But to load out, he would put on to protect his gear, to protect his hands.
Yeah, yeah, and to protect the finish on his guitar. And
what is it with the bass players, man?
I don't know,
man.
More
like that.
The bass players are so bizarre. We've been through a lot of them, but they are. Bass players are the most, maybe the most unique personalities.
They are. You know, my good friend Michael Terabay played with Pat Green for a lot of years.
Yep.
He's still with Pat? I'm pretty sure he is.
He is. We just played a show with Pat, and he was there.
Yeah. Terabay, great guy. And a great bass player. He'd sub in a lot. But, man, he was – you talk about another bass guy. I used to give him a hard time.
And just, an interesting guy.
Oh, man, about his Sadowski bass and his Eden bass cabinets. Comes man, he'd just go on forever about – I'm like, dude, just play the – and he would. He would sit back and play. He really would. But he'd kind of let you know that, man, he could really open up if he wanted to. And his gear. And he wanted it riding a particular way in the back of the van. And I'm like, look, man, if you're so concerned about your gear, just get you a Squire bass or something. Just throw it in a gig bag, you know. No, man, I don't get that. Those things are terrible. The tone of the pickups on my Sadowski are hand-wired. And I'm just like, dude, then fine. Just sleep with it then. I don't care. We're just going down here to the KA house to bang out a couple hours. I mean, I started just playing cheap guitars and whatever. But, yeah, I don't know what it is about the bass. There's a...
I think it's the four-string mentality.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at least you hope it's four-string mentality. Unfortunately, a lot
most
of them are
the
six,
it's
and
it's six and eight. And, oh, but, boy. Another key deal is the fretless. A lot of guys bust out the fretless
bass.
Oh,
my gosh, man. We had a bass player.
Now, my first guy played, he had a fretless bass, but he would play straight. He didn't do the slippy-slidey thing. It's just something he had from his old jazz days or something. Kevin Jecker. Pretty straight-ahead player. But then also, you know, Bobby and some of those guys would have the fretless and just be.
Mitch Marine, who I love dearly.
Yeah, the great Mitch Marine.
Monster drummer, great drummer. Plays with Dwight Yoakam now. Mm-hmm. He's played with Smash Mouth, among many others.
Yeah, yeah.
Toured the world as world-class drummer. And, you know, this within my first year with Jack, he says, hey, man, I'd love to get that bass gig. You know, because
bass?
Well, he said, man, I've been playing country bass for about a year now with a cover band. Yeah. And so I said, well,
ready to take the next step.
And so it's like, you know, I mentioned it to Jack, and Jack was open to it.
He's always looking for a bass player.
And so, you know, Mitch shows up with a fretless bass.
Like yellow.
And he's like still learning. And he's, he was in the band a year and a half. Learning on a fretless bass, and there was some real interesting
takes on some jacking and country music.
Yeah, because once he got lost in a song, the fishing that went on to try to find his way back was just priceless.
Yeah, it's so hard to be the guy like you. the guy who wrote the song or something. Because you know how it's supposed to go. You've played it. It is hard to work a new guy in who struggles. I mean, and anybody's going to struggle. And you cut guys a lot of slack. But, yeah, there are those guys that can just magically kind of fill in. And you forget they're even over there. Because they're just on the root note. They'll just kind of lay out. If there's a quick little change, they're not really, they don't know is coming. They'll pick it right back up. So those guys are priceless, man.
You ever heard of a guy named Donnie Ray Ford?
No.
Played with the Cartwrights.
Yeah, I know the Cartwrights. Yeah, I've heard of
him. He was the bass player and singer in the Cartwrights, man. And he's one of the best country bass players I've ever heard.
Yeah, yeah.
Outstanding bass player.
So easygoing, man. Yeah. Well, man, you know, I tell guys that to be in a band, if you're going to be a songwriter or something, you can't be a three-legged table. You know,
no.
One of those legs breaks, just the whole thing goes down. I said, man, you got to be putting legs under that table all the time. I mean, I've still got in my phone, I've been lucky to have longtime bass players like Blue and Stu, my drummer, Stolly and Lynch with me. Yeah, I've had about 6 years here with just only a couple guys at each position. But, man, I've still got all those old Austin guys in there.
Yeah.
And one night JW's plane got canceled from Dallas to Houston. Me and Stu were down there. He couldn't show up, man. I called Shane Hildreth in Houston, played with me for a long time. I called Lynch. I called Doug Holm, my old Suburban's Legends era bass player in Austin.
Wow.
Couple other guys, Stormy Cooper from Krager's band. None, couldn't do it. And we had a good paying gig down there. Well, Josh Owen was opening the show. Do you know Josh?
Yeah.
Young kid, great guitar player. I figured if he could play guitar like that, he could play bass. I said, hey, Josh, can you play bass? He goes, man, I'll play some bass, sure. And he'd seen us play, and he kind of knew I said, man, you want to play? And he was excited. And so he played bass the whole show.
That's excellent. Picked up
J-Dub's bass. I think he played with a pick. I said, man, just pluck that, G, C, and D. And we just did some blues stuff. And, man, then we switched. And the crowd was really into it. I gave him my guitar. Of course, he's a great guitar player.
Oh, yeah.
And I played bass. And we just played some blues thing for like 15 minutes, and made up lyrics. And everyone was like, man, that was a great show. I go, man. So I tell him, I go, man, you got to be able just to pull off the show. You can't just say, I can't show up. Because somebody's got a cold,
That's right.
Got to keep it going, Pete. Well, man, that is some encouragement out there. Some red flags.
I was going to tell you about Josh. I played on his record.
Oh, did you really?
And,
yeah.
Man,
Jack produced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed working with him. He's a good guy. Sorry.
Real good kid. Yeah. I know he's playing with Honey Brown. He's not anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing.
I know he's doing stuff, but he's one of those guys that get a gig anywhere. He's a really good player, good singer. And
nice
good
smile.
Kid, Josh Owen. Check him out. Nice smile. Brother of the great Scotty Owen. Used to play a great guitar player also.
Yep.
Played with Roger for years and years. Well, that is some band talk. Let me tell you what. Before you make the record, before you get the booking agent, we need in-ear monitors and a real agent. No, you don't. What you need to do, man, is get your cell phone full of some dudes who can play, who can just roll in there. And let me tell you what. You're probably talking about, like you're talking about, Pete, some old dude with gray, cottony hair and a red face. And that's probably going to be the guy who can do the best.
Yep.
Some young, good-looking guy is just going to give you some Red Hot Chili Peppers bass lines. It's not going to do you a damn bit of good.
If a guy starts warming up and he's popping and thumping and
sliding on the fretless, you're done.
Might be the...
If he shows up with the double kick pedal and the drums, ooh, bad.
Wow.
Look out, look out. This is country, baby.
That's bad.
Woo! Country and Texas music, man, it's almost like the stuff we play, it's so simple. There's just a language there I've found over the years. It's almost like playing jazz. I don't know just a whole lot about jazz, but it's, man, at the Flatland Jam last year I talked about, we got on stage, me and Stu and some of the Ragweed guys and a couple other guys from one of the local bands there, Matt Posse's band, just some good players who had a common language. We knew a couple Ingram songs, we knew some of our stuff, some old Stones and the band. And, man, we just played for 3 hours. I mean, you'd have thought we were, but I just kind of was able to band lead them through it. I'd done it so many times, and I could tell, hey, man, this guy can play piano, man. Put him on piano.
Yeah.
Look, you play the bass. And man, we just sat there. It was great. I mean, it was just, once you just kind of say, hey, man, we're going G, C, and D, follow me, start with the drums. It's pretty exciting, man.
It is very cool to be able to do it that way, man.
And a lot of these guys, the good guys, can do that.
Yeah, and there's, it's I guess it's surprising to me how many bands, young bands, don't have the ability to just play like that.
Yeah, they want to have a chart, or they want. I was kind of like, man, just sit there and just vibe along with it, man. Kind of like I'm saying, it's sort of a musical conversation. Yeah, just watch me. You can see my hand positions, what chords I'm playing. Just do a little lick right there in A, you know, and then we're down here on E, you know, just do a little fill.
We had a sound man, front of house sound man for a while, who had been out with a platinum selling band.
Yeah.
I mean, like a big band.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, after listening to us do sound check, he said, it's amazing. He said, you guys just get up there and do that stuff. And he said, the band that he had been with, he said, they can't do that. He said, they can't just get up and jam. He said, they have to know
technical precision. Yeah. The click track's got to come up in their headphones, in ears.
And they just don't even have the ability to sit up and play. They don't even know how to play like the normal just blues progressions or any of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're so young and they're just raised on, stuff that came out of like the 80s and 90s.
Right.
They didn't know how to play. Yeah, they don't know the roots of American music.
That's right. Well, it's and I think the only thing you can do is just play a lot and not be afraid to put yourself in uncomfortable situations. Just jump up on stage with somebody and follow along and learn like that. Yeah. It's kind of like I get with I'm always frustrated. I'll get some piano guy will come in who's incredible, just playing Rachmaninoff, and you just say, "Hey, man, let's play." Let's just play some Boogie, some Jerry Lee Lewis. He just goes, I can't do
it.
I'm like, what do you mean you can't do that? I go, it's just gang, 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 gang. You're playing one chord. Come on. If they don't have their sheet music, that's just how they do
it.
They read.
It falls apart for them.
It goes from the page into their hands. They play what's in front of them. They can't sit there and just watch my foot and watch my hand position. And when I scream, go to the B7. They just jump over there and just do a little
it's
fill.
It's a feel
they
thing.
It is. It's feel.
A feel. They can't get the feel. Even if they get the chord right, they can't get the feel a lot of times.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was in a studio
situation.
How
can you be that good at piano and not sit here and play a 3-chord song and just sort of do some cool stuff?
I was doing a recording with some guys, and it was like really, down and dirty mm-hmm. rock and country mm-hmm. music. And the piano player had been called in.
This guy's amazing.
Yeah.
Probably like our bass player. And he'd been to school.
Just could not get it. I mean, couldn't figure out why the progression moved the way it did, and he couldn't get the feel, and it was just like that. It was like if you'd set some very complex classical piece in front of him, he would have sight-read it off the page and played it tremendously. But
yeah.
He just could not get what we were doing.
He could sit there and just play whole notes.
Yeah, I asked the producer, why did you call him? And he said, man, he said, I got his name from somebody and I thought he would be the guy. I was like, well, that's unfortunate. But
yeah.
Now, on the converse of that, on the other side of that coin, I got to tell you that the guy that's playing with us right now mm-hmm. in Jack's band, his name is Billy Nobel, 27 years old.
Uh-huh.
And
keys or guitar?
A piano player.
Keys.
And he schooled,
Sure.
So he's got those things going. It's like 27, he's young, and he's gone to school, classical composition.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy plays boogie-woogie and rock and roll and country like he was steeped in it. It's uncanny.
You can just start playing something, he'll just fall right in.
Uncanny. It's unbelievable. And I've listened to the stuff he did for his graduate work, for his thesis, I guess.
Right.
The pieces that he did, he's got a CD of it, and it's... I mean, it's beautiful, complex pieces. But he can play boogie-woogie and rock and roll and all that kind of stuff. And Stevie Wonder and all that stuff. He plays it all.
Yeah.
And there are a few people like that are exceptionally talented.
Both, yeah.
They can do both and.
Right.
You know?
But you'd rather have just a feely guy up there and someone you like. As B.B. King said, I'd rather play with people I like than people who are good any day.
Well, let me tell you, and that's a huge component, because if you get somebody that you can't travel with and can't get on with, then it makes it miserable no matter how good of a player they are. But if you get a guy that is outstanding to be around and be with, and he may not be the best player, but you know what? It'll probably work out better.
Yeah. You know, our great friend... the late, great Kirby Stanley, who was Roger Craiger's road manager, and a really great friend of mine.
Great guy.
Would hang out after every Kreger gig, and man, we could make each other laugh. We would just stay up all night. He was just a hilarious guy, and he was kind of a guitar player, wrote some songs, plucked around, but he was Roger's road manager, you know. And he said, "Well, I'm not really a musician." Well, Lynch had got our bass player had gotten a job in Dallas, wasn't gonna be able to go on the road as much, and Kirby had said, like, "Man, I'd love to be in a band, but I suck or something." You know? And man, I went to him. I just said, "Dude, if you want to be the bass player in this band, you're hired. Just let me know." And he thought I was kidding. He goes, "I'm terrible." I'd seen him play the guitar a little bit. He could pluck around a lot. I said, "Man, you work on it, you'd be okay." But I liked him so much, I didn't care. I go, "Man, it doesn't matter. If you're the guy in the van and you're the guy I can look over and laugh at during the show and stuff, that's the guy you want. I don't care how good he can play the bass." I said, he can get through "God Save the King" and Snuff Machine, sure, or whatever we're doing. You know, I was like, "Man, you could get through that stuff. I'll get you through it." And he couldn't believe it. He was like, "But I'm not a professional." I'm just like, "Dude, you'll be fine."
And then Roger snatched him up.
That's right. Yeah. But he was, I just liked him so much, I'd have had him in the band, no question about it.
Yeah, he was great.
Great guy. Well, man, there's some good, man, you got to keep it going. So, man, don't be a three-legged table. We got to be finding those legs, putting them under there. Well, in our next segment here, I want to talk to Pete. Last week, Kurt Southey talked about the bands you're ashamed to say you like, the bands you're ashamed to say you don't like. I want to get Pete Cody's thoughts here, a legendary Texas rocker. Let's see what Pete has to say about that in our next segment when we come back. Won't change what's inside me. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Email us, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me at 817-733-5256. Book the full band. We go everywhere, man, all the time. Weddings, graduations, club openings, and club closings.
Bar mitzvahs?
Bar mitzvahs, of course. We do it all. Quinceañeras. We've done them all, man.
Club closings.
Many of those. Club closings. Opening night of your club and the last. The great Pete Cotney from Jack Ingram's Beat Up Ford Band and my good friend is here today. We were talking in our first segment about the importance of keeping the band going. Having that laundry list of bass players, drummers, that kind of thing if you're a songwriter. Staying out on the road. Always having a good guy in mind when that flight doesn't come in, when someone gets the flu, somebody breaks a hand. Oh, man, it happens all the time. Happens all the time. Got to keep that band going. That's often where the rubber meets the road, more important than, how much radio you're getting there, press or all that. Can you stay out there? Can you show up and play? That's the question. Are you going to make it? Are you going to show up? That's all. Well, Pete Cotney's been showing up for quite a while now. We always like to ask whoever's in here your guilty pleasures. You know, the bands you may be ashamed to say you like. And we also want to hear maybe some bands that everyone likes, perhaps most people, that you'd be ashamed to say, you know what? Not me. I don't get into it. Now, who did you start with? Guilty pleasures. You don't know how guilty it was. But.
Yeah. Well, one of my guilty pleasures, I guess, would be Wham.
Well, who did you say before that, though? Before Wham, you were talking...
Was it the metal stuff?
Yeah, oh, the heavy metal. Yeah.
It's a genre more than it is a particular band. You know,
he was telling about this speed, just death metal you listen to on KNON sometimes.
You know, with the Grover vocals or...
Yeah. Just the
and with the blast beats and the guitars.
16th notes on the kick drum.
Or 30 seconds or 64th sometimes. Yeah. I mean, gosh, it sounds like those guys are... like some of that music literally sounds like a machine running.
Yeah.
You know,
like just a herd of buffalo running over you or something.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just the sheer intensity of that stuff that it's just jaw-dropping that those guys can play that fast with that much intensity for one song, let alone a whole show. And I just find it fascinating.
Yeah. And you like just hearing what they're doing on it.
As a genre, it is fascinating.
Speed metal, just screamo, intenso.
I guess what I'm ashamed to admit is that I don't really know any of the artists or the band names. I mean, I know a few of them, but I don't know the song titles. Everything sounds the same.
We did an album with a band in here, and the drummer came in, had a lot of drums, had an elaborate setup. I said, man, what kind of music do you like? And without missing a beat, he says, man, Swedish death metal. I just kind of go, no, really. He's like, really, man, I'm being totally serious, Swedish death metal. I'm like, Swedish death metal. And, you know, he played a little bit, just, just started rocking that stuff. Then he just goes into a country tune.
There's a couple of those Norwegian bands that they took it, you know, to the literal extreme. There's one of those guys killed one of his band members and ate part of his body.
What are you talking about? What are you bringing to the podcast here? What is so dark?
Yeah, let's bring
Pete
it to Cody,
the Prince of the Dark Arts here.
Screech.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Put the needle
first
back
of all, you say
record.
You like Wham. Then you're going to go into some drummer that he ate his band members.
Yeah.
So Wham. Go into that a little bit.
Well, here. I got to tell
that's
you,
a,
man.
That's a tough one, maybe, I think, for our rural Texas country audience out there listening faithfully on RadioFreeTexas.org and PhilPritchard.com.
Well, I guess I've always been a fan of
the great pop song.
Pop songs,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Pop melodies, great melodies.
What were some of their big ones? I can't even wake me up.
Freedom. Yeah, wake me up. See, and think how catchy that is. You can't say you don't wish you hadn't written that song.
Yeah. Now that's George Michael, Freedom, right?
Yeah.
You have to give me what you
I can. Don't want your freedom.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to.
Okay.
That's on that Wham record.
What was the rap one? Didn't they have like a rap Wham rap? Well, how did it go?
I don't remember, but here,
but you know what I'm talking about.
Here you go. I was just within the last few weeks, I got out my Wham cassette. and put it in the cassette.
We're looking
player.
At that in the vault here today.
Yeah.
Wham! On
and
cassette.
I played and I practiced to the whole record. Practiced to the whole thing. Oh, there was that ballad too. Oh my gosh, what is that? Oh well,
jeez. Don't look at me for help. Don't look it over here. Come on, Phil. Like I'm getting ready to start singing a couple of bars. Although I'm sure I could. If you give me one note, I could probably play the whole song.
Yeah.
Memorable Wham. Well, man, that is not something you would bring up in mixed company, probably backstage.
You know what? I'm not so ashamed.
Hanging with Leonard Skinner and Gary Allen, maybe you'd go, man, yeah, listen to Wham. They're pretty good, man.
Yeah,
often
I guess
overlooked.
You have to be careful where you bring that up. But,
where you bring that up a little bit. Now, let's do the flip side of the coin here. Pete is a lover of all music, man. You like death metal. You like Wham.
Yeah.
Who likes Wham and death metal? And, of course, all the classic stuff, country, rock and roll, jazz.
Southern gospel. I love Southern gospel quartets.
He loves it all, man. Yeah. So I said, Pete is a lover, not a fighter. I said, man, what are some bands maybe you don't like that other people would like? And he said, man, I just couldn't think. I named a bunch of, you know, maybe some sticking points for other guys. Like, man, do you like kind of the prog rock, like Yes or Genesis? He kind of goes, no, man, I like some of that stuff. I love it. R.E.M., early R.E.M. No. That's cool. Nothing. Tell you what, though, man, we get over to the vinyl section. And who do I pull out? The man recently has been dragged through the mud a little bit. I don't know if it stems from his Super Bowl halftime performance or too much touring of late. But Bruce Springsteen, Pete kind of crinkled his nose a little bit. I'm like, no, Springsteen. Now, me and Kurt South have gone round and round about this. It's tough for a lot of guys. I think what's happening to Springsteen is, he had such a great reputation for so long. And deservedly so. Worked hard, played great shows, played forever, played for 3 hours. But he's done a lot of touring lately, and it starts to wear people down. There's just a point of diminishing returns on some of these old shows. And, man, I have found, this is just me, and maybe I'm hearing this from you and Kurt, that you go back, you throw on those old records that some people think are really great, and, man, there's... I don't know if they don't sound that good or just the songs aren't that great. I have a hard time listening to them. I just don't find myself going back into his catalog and just throwing on The River or Darkness on the Edge of Town. There's moments on there, man, not like the Petty stuff or the Dylan stuff. And it's not fair to compare people to those guys. But I'm like, man, those guys got whole records you can listen to. Neil Young, you got four or five that you can just throw on. Springsteen, maybe that's less true. Would you agree?
Well, I would say that Springsteen fits in that genre, so he would be judged by his peers, you know, as we look at it.
We did Scarecrow, John Mellencamp. What a great album. Yeah. I mean, just incredible. I mean, I'm like, man, that's just... Springsteen doesn't have a song that would make it onto that record. That is going to piss a lot of people
statement.
Off. Well, Rain on the Scarecrow. I was born in a small town, R-O-C-K in the USA, Minutes to Memories. You're kind of like, you know, would you just throw Rosalita on there? I mean, I love it, you know, but it's long. It's kind of Bruce got his own style.
Yeah.
You know, it's there aren't a lot of...
Born to Run.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's got a couple. He's got a couple, man.
I mean, here's the thing. Bruce is venerated, and rightly so, because of his reputation as a live performer.
As
and
a worker.
He's written some really great, classic, iconic songs.
Sure.
He's not my favorite, and I don't fall down and worship at Bruce's feet by any means. In fact, I just... He's not one that comes up in my top 10, in my top 20, probably not in my top 50.
Wow. And now you're speaking strong.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of folks that would probably find that, you know, verboten, but
It's hard to go see him live and not buy into what he's doing. I mean, he's up there. It's very energetic, but it borders on, and maybe just now, maybe not in the early days, I don't know. But
yeah.
It borders on some histrionics, some going over the top, long segments of preaching and whatnot and cheerleading if the crowd's really not really into it. He's working hard, and I admire him for that. But you kind of go back to, man, wait a minute, wait, what about the music here? Everybody loves to go, man, Dylan sucks lives and stuff. Great, but Dylan also made a lot of great records you can still throw on and listen all the way through. And Springsteen, it just, you know, and he gets compared to Dylan a lot, some of his stuff. Like, oh, he's the new Dylan when he came out. And he always had a big machine behind him, a corporate. There's a great book called Mansion on the Hill. Have you ever read that?
I have not.
Great, great book. Oh, who wrote it? It's about Neil Young, Bruce Springsteen, and all these. And it's called it's kind of about the death of rock and roll. And, man, it paints a pretty... not too flattering portrait of Springsteen and just how intense he was about making it and fame and working out and all this stuff that he was really hung up on and how John Landau, his manager, was just a real genius about tying him in with certain causes to get the most bang for the buck and stuff. And again, you're not saying that he's not sincere about feeding the hungry or something. But there was no doubt, like the No Nukes concert was a big part. There's a big segment in the book on that and just how, you know, just how it was played
right.
To really benefit Bruce.
Well, and why
you're brilliantly so, but it's...
While you're mentioning that, though,
you know,
I mean, you could probably level that particular criticism at many pop artists.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Believe me, they will not cease to find an opportunity to use to their advantage.
Right. That's right.
Their publicist is going to be on top of that at every turn.
I just find you can quibble about, you know, those corporate deals or the all that kind of stuff. But again, for me, it just comes back to the records and the music. And I don't know whether I just maybe his sound or his voice, you know, he's just kind of got the tinkling keyboards, and his records kind of have a high, thin sound to them. His lyrics are he kind of treads over the same ground a lot.
Yep.
And the saxophone solos and the keyboard tinklings, and I don't know, man. I don't know if it's just it's just not kind of rock and roll enough.
Is it rubbed thin on you at this point?
Something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something about the old records, man. Did you ever just throw on The River or Born to Run or Darkness on the Edge of Town or Greetings from and just lay back and get lost in the music? I'm like, man, not once, not ever. No. I've seen him live. I think he's great. But as far as just going back and really getting something out of the music, I find there's not a lot there for me.
Wow.
Is that kind of what you...
Well, here's how it goes for me. I have never been engaged by him enough to even get into his records. I don't know that I've sat and listened to a whole record.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe incidentally, but
yeah.
But I have not been engaged enough by him as a total package,
right.
Musically or his vocal stylings, to sit down and go, yeah, I can't wait to listen to that new record or anything.
Very rare to have a guy, the brilliant songwriter who is brilliant live.
Right.
The guys like Dylan or Ryan Adams.
Tom Petty.
Sometimes have a reputation of writing great stuff, Ryan Adams and Dylan, and then struggling live to really bring it across.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, Tom Petty.
You know, that's sometimes part of it. Petty, I would argue, is maybe not just the world's most gifted songwriter, but he has some really good songs. You look at Petty, man, he's maybe not the greatest live show, but he's really damn good.
Yeah.
He's maybe not just the poet of the age, but he's got some good, solid stuff, man. He kind of works into the middle of some of those categories that makes him an all-around good act, you know?
Right. And he's really good at what he does.
And he's just really good at what he does.
It's like high-quality work.
That's right. But sometimes the great live bands who just do a lot of cheerleading and jumping around, their music tends to not be that great on record. And the guys who just make those great records, sometimes it's a lot of pressure to go out on the road and pull it off.
Yeah.
You know. Well, oh, man, anything else? Anything like Wham or anything else?
Anything else like that? Let's see.
Guilty pleasures.
Well, I don't know how guilty this is. I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit this,
myself.
I guess, but ABBA, I love ABBA.
Oh,
how
boy.
Could you not like ABBA?
Oh, yeah.
Some beautiful melodies, great
songs.
Place,
I know you can get is it ABBA or ABBA? ABBA?
Well.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You prefer the Swedish pronunciation. They got a lot of records out there at Half Price Books. Vaults, just racks.
Believe me, I've got a good collection of their vinyl.
Boy, my parents had Darling, can you hear me? SOS. You need a pretty ballerina. What were some of the other good ones? Dancing Queen, of course.
Dancing Queen's great.
Oh,
my gosh, that's a great song.
You know, there's an interesting article I read recently. An agent owns a corporation. God, what does he call it? It's called something. To where he has several ABBA tribute bands.
Yes.
That's his company.
Yes, I've heard
Very
of it.
Very fascinating. And I was like, what? And
they tour different parts of the world.
Yes. Yep. They've all got the blonde hair and the two guys and the two girls. And they play weddings. They play and he doesn't just have one. Like, oh, man, they're already booked their 100 nights a year. He's got like two or three or four.
Yeah.
And he just works them all over the world, and it's supposedly very lucrative, man.
People just hire it. Tribute band,
you know,
over in when I was over in the UK.
Is that right?
Yeah,
yeah. Just come out and do it.
Really quite good.
Yeah. Well, you know, you run into that a lot, not so much in a tribute sense, but I know the Temptations ran into that, where for a while, I remember this in the 90s because I went and saw the Temptations, quote unquote, at Starplex.
Yeah.
And there was some controversy there because there's only one guy in the band who was ever in the real Temptations. And he'd kind of gone out and didn't own the name, the Temptations.
Right.
Then there was another guy who was had a band called the Temptations. We're the real Temptations. There's a lot of gray area there because, you know, those guys, that name, what has the value is the name of that act.
Sure.
To book it. And for a while, there were several bands going around calling themselves the Temptations who maybe had one guy in it. Or, man, that guy didn't come on until the 70s. We're the real deal. Us two guys. A couple guys had passed away. You know, very confusing. But the ABBA thing was interesting. This guy, no confusion there. He just said, man, we are a business. And we, I guess he recruits those talents. He goes and sees some blonde-head singer somewhere crooning. Just, how would you like to make a lot of money, friend? Touring the UK is ABBA. We've got the other two guys. What were their names? Like Bjorn and any of their names?
I don't even know their names.
Were they married, ABBA?
I think so. I think a couple of them were married.
Yeah,
to each
kind
other.
Of a Swedish Fleetwood Mac kind of deal.
Yeah,
I think
without all the downside.
Yeah, all the cocaine.
Man, you talk about some great records, those mid-70s Fleetwood Mac records.
Oh, boy. That's a topic for another time, Peter.
I mean,
Fleetwood Mac, I'm a huge fan, yeah.
God,
no guilty
great
pleasure
songs,
there.
Oh, great songs, great playing, great sounds.
Oh, dude, amazing. So much tension.
Lindsey Buckingham, the way he plays guitar.
That guy's a genius, man.
Lindsey Buckingham. You know what? Mick Fleetwood is a big influence on my playing. And
you know what?
That's a name that does not come out in drummers' conversations very often.
Oh, man, because he's so unconventional. He played on we mentioned this on the podcast. We did a podcast about Excitable Boy, the great Warren Zevon album.
Right.
And Fleetwood played drums on a lot of those tracks. In fact, that's him on Werewolves of London. And if you just kind of listen to it, sure enough, there's just these weird kind of fills and weird parts and little stutters on the kick drum and hi-hat fills.
Some real subtle stuff.
You kind of listen to it, you're kind of like, man, a studio guy probably wouldn't do that. Sure enough, Mick Fleetwood and John McVie on bass played on that. Jackson Brown produced. Oh, man. Well, man, Pete Coden has been sitting here sharing, man, just laying on the couch here, getting it off his chest, admitting to the world out there, to the P2 podcast world, that he does like Wham, he does like death metal, and just let his freak flag fly. So we wish him great luck with that. Thanks for bringing that to the podcast. I hope you feel better. I hope you go out feeling a little bit lighter about yourself these days.
Well,
like a burden has been shed.
Yes, much better.
Well, I hope you run into some guy at a show in New Hampshire or something with Ingram and Gary Allen, and someone calls you out. Say, Cody, man.
You like Wham.
How's Wham? George Michael says hello. I hope. If you're out there and you're going to go to a Jack Ingram show here in the next few months, take a sign to the show and just says, we love Wham too, Pete, and just hold it up there in the crowd. And then have Jack, maybe pull the guy up on stage or something. Will you do that for me? Let us know the podcast is getting out there. Thanks
That'd
a lot,
be great.
Fans.
If that happens, I'll definitely let you know.
Well, man, we've had a stack of vinyl here on the debating about what to do here in the vault. Debating about it. We've been talking about the Talking Heads, maybe. AC/DC. We could look at Fleetwood Mac. Come on, pick one, Peter. What do you think we go with here? In the vault.
Oh, man.
So difficult. So difficult. We got 77 over there looking at us.
I know. It's been a long time since I've listened to that, so we probably should do something I've listened to that I'm more familiar with more recently.
Well,
and I have listened to Stop Making Sense recently.
How about Stop Making Sense, the great Talking Heads soundtrack from the great film, Jonathan Demme?
Yep.
In the Vault, same as it ever was. Talking Heads, coming up next. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Call us, 817-733-5256. Come record here at Trinidad World Recording. Come into the confines here. Phil will play drums, bass, whatever you need. Make a record.
What's that number, Phil?
Pete, you got it over there? 817-733-5256. When are you going to make the Pete Coatney solo record and come in here?
I would love to. I was also trying to call and book you guys for a Christmas party. That's why I need
tell you
that.
What, man. You bring your Slingerland drums in here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We'll cut a song or two for you.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? That's a fair trade, huh?
But remember that Phil and the full band will do a Christmas party for you, too.
Oh, no question about it.
And they're booking right now.
Yeah, we just got booked. We're also looking for we're in the market for a New Year's Day. How did a New Year's Day to... We played this great ranch party down in Orange the last few years. Kelly Cordova and the guys. I fire off the Civil War cannon at midnight.
All right.
A couple of years in a row. Fantastic. Kelly, if you're listening, book us again. We love it. But Kelly, if you're out of the market, no problem. We understand. If somebody else out there wants to pick up a New Year's gig, P2, FB are looking around. Well, man, we were looking in the vault there. P2 Pete. With there's a lot of records over there. He picks up "Stop Making Sense" by the Talking Heads. Now, hold on, everyone. Talking Heads. Perhaps some people don't know a lot about it. The weird band. Oh man, so great. And what's so puzzling about the Talking Heads to me? So weird. Songs like, of course, you know, "And You May Find Yourself Living in a Shotgun Shack," you know, and "Burning Down the House," "Psycho Killer." People know the Talking Heads songs, you know. They're like, oh, you know, that guy's weird in the big suit and all that. The images associated with the band. But man, in very, when you listen to their music, very 80s, very, you'd say dated in a sense, but man, it's still very fresh. They're one of those rare 80s bands that doesn't age or something. Yeah, you know, some of these old 80s guys, you listen to their old albums, you kind of cringe and go, it's kind of doesn't hold up too well. Talking Heads, free use of little drum machines and synths and stuff. But man, it still sounds, I still want to listen to it. Why is that, Pete?
I think it's because it's great songs with melodies and quirky enough to remain somehow relevant. There's some uniqueness to
very,
them.
Very cutting edge still. You don't get your head around quite what they're doing. It's very high concept. Yeah.
Well, they were all art school students.
Yeah.
They met each other at
art
school.
They came out of the New York kind of CBGB scene.
Yeah.
They were sort of it's a weird time in the late 70s or mid-70s in New York. You had CBGBs, you had the Ramones and all these punk bands playing, Blondie, and some other bands came out of that
Television.
Scene. Television. Also had the Talking Heads playing there. In their little, as David Byrne, the lead singer, says, little golf shirts that his parents would send him. He said, "We didn't have any costumes. He said, I just had my guitar and my little slacks and a little white collared shirt." He said, "You know, we were up there in like our school clothes, just sort of banging away." Because all the Ramones had their leather jackets, and Blondie and stuff had all these kind of wild outfits and things. He said, "Man, we were just kind of everyday, but very
art
artistic.
Nerds. They looked like nerds.
Kind of nerds. They're a nerdy band. That was their whole appeal." Well, this is "Stop Making Sense." Was a film, Jonathan Demme, a concert film, documentary. Not really a documentary. It was just a concert film, much like maybe "The Last Waltz" or something. "The Last Waltz" more of a documentary. A lot of interviews with the band.
Yeah.
And this is more of just the whole concert, the whole show.
Yeah, it's a great
which
concert film.
Famously starts, and you need to go see "Stop Making Sense." It's in a theater. I forget where they did it all. Where did they film all
it
this?
It was in California.
California, yeah. Was it Winterland or one of those ones out there like that?
I don't know. It says back here. I can't really see that. See if you can see it.
That's where it's recorded.
Let me see.
So you can tell we're doing this.
Sire Records.
We're actually doing this for real, folks. We're handing the
recorded
the
Pantages Theater, Hollywood. Pantages.
Yeah, I've actually
Hollywood.
Seen that place.
December 1983. But what happens is the curtain opens, and what's on the stage, Pete?
Well, David Byrne comes
nothing.
Out.
Nothing.
With it. Well,
there's
right.
nothing on
that's
the stage.
That's exactly right. There's nothing, and then David Byrne comes out with a. In fact, you can even see the back of the studio, like the bare
like
the loading
ladder,
area.
The ladders. Yeah, there's absolutely nothing on the stage.
Looks like nothing's taking place
when the concert starts.
And then Byrne
there.
Comes out with a jam box and his acoustic guitar and
places
says
it on the floor. Yeah, but he says something like, "Hello, we're going to play for you tonight." And he hits play, and this little computerized little drum machine just, and he starts playing "Psycho Killer," and the whole genius of the show, just to kind of give people a, is as this stuff is happening, as Burns playing, slowly he goes into the next song and the next, and nothing happens. They roll out a riser with the drums on it, maybe like covered under a sheet or something. If so. And slowly, behind him, people start bringing out amps and keyboards, and he gets joined. The bass player, Tina, comes out, and the whole thing evolves. And, of course, by the end of the show, when they're doing "Take Me to the River," there's just like, you know, 25 people on stage. There's horns. There's dance. It's just, it's evolved to this deal. And the whole time, Byrne is just sort of, he's out front, and he just is oblivious maybe to what's going on behind him as the show, massive show, builds with him. He's just many, many critics who go to millions of shows and seen everything say, "Man, the Talking Heads, what are the best concerts you ever seen?" in order. And they said, well, I saw the Talking Head six times, so that's 1 through 6, and then we'll pick up number 7 with, you know, whoever.
Wow.
The Rolling Stones. They're just the greatest live act because it was so innovative and cool. And have you seen the Talking Heads?
I have not. That's one band that I wish I could have seen before they decided to call it quits, because of the quirkiness of the personalities involved. It's not likely that they will get back together. It doesn't seem like it. I would sure love to see that band, though.
Kevin Haggard, our good friend in Houston, a patron saint of the full band, big music fan, he went to the Austin City Limits Festival recently, where Byrne played solo, David Byrne, and didn't know a whole lot about him, than maybe the average, yeah, I know a couple of the songs, and just said, man, it was just flooring, that it was just his theatrics. Again, not quite going into like gimmickry, but just real artistic and cool, and just a great band and everything. Remember that show? What was that show they had on PBS, the small theater, Studio 57 or something like
that? Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I know what you're talking about.
The Sessions at West 57th,
right,
or something
right.
Like that?
Something like that.
It was on a very short period of time, but David Byrne is on there doing a show, and this was the first time I saw him. This was solo, and man, it was just the most bizarre. Every song was just a total piece. They started playing Psycho Killer, and all of a sudden, Byrne just emerges in the audience. He just rises up out of the audience, and he's wearing a head-to-toe bodysuit with, like, the human muscles.
Wow.
I can't seem to face up through the facts. Kind of unnerving, kind of disturbing, but riveting. I was just like, what is going on? Then he kind of works his way through the crowd, just singing Psycho Killer, comes back to the stage and just pounds it out. It's amazing, man. It was just
wow.
Like... a lot of visuals, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know what was interesting, too, about that the Demi film was the stark simplicity. Like, the lights were all real simple and white lights. And they used lamps, floor lamps. And
Right.
And very, very simple. The stage costuming was stark. It was either like a gray or white set against a kind of a black backdrop.
Right.
And all the lighting was very just sparse, white lighting. It was
right.
Beautifully done.
Oh, man.
To great effect.
Yeah, it's a very, very artistic film. Great music, of course. And, you know, ended up kind of being, I don't know how many more records they did after this. They might have done, is it Little Creatures? Came out after this.
Is that the one with the monkey on the cover?
Yeah. No, the painting, the Amami head, little babe.
We're on the
road to nowhere.
Right. What's the one that had the monkey on the cover?
The monkey on the cover?
Yeah, it's a red cover with a monkey on it.
Oh.
I can't even remember at this
point. You stumped me, Courtney.
I know. They had a few after that. They had the other film that they did.
True Stories,
yeah.
Was that Talking Heads or just Byrne?
It was Talking Heads.
Yeah. Was it a concert film, or was it kind of a weird acting deal?
No, it
was
just the soundtrack and songs that they wrote for the movie.
Song he did. Yeah, dude, he wears the big suit, you know, the oversized suit for burning down the house. A lot of visuals, man. So the Talking Heads, man, check out Stop Making Sense. It's kind of a good, as with many live records, it's musically ends up kind of being a greatest hits kind of deal. I mean, they're playing their big songs, you know, at the show, so... it's always good to start off. You know, people buy Phil Pritchett albums, I always kind of say, man, just get the Cool Unusual Punishment. That's us playing all the fan songs.
You know, it's a very good primer for Talking Heads.
You know, Jack Ingram, yeah, maybe go get the Billy Bob CD, or you get Live at 8 Ears or something. I don't know.
No, I would say get them all.
Get them all. JackIngram.net.
Yep, that's it.
Jack Ingram got
them. Get them all.
Well, man, go see Jack Ingram and the Beat Up Ford Band, man, out playing with... Gary Allen, All Fall. The new record is called
Big Dreams and High Hopes.
Big Dreams and High Hopes is out there now. You can download all of his stuff at iTunes, I'm sure. I noticed Jack's merch site is just like mine.
Really?
Did I inspire that?
Perhaps.
It's the exact layout. It's the Big Cartel layout.
Wow.
Because I know he used to have some other deal, and then I went to it the other day.
Were you buying some stuff, Phil?
Yeah, man, I was down there perusing. I was just like, which koozie should I get?
Did you load up your cart and just buy a bunch of stuff?
Load up my cart. Actually, my web guy said, hey, Ned Ingram's change the storefront. It's just like yours or something. There's a company that does it, but it's a good way to do it, man. Lots of stuff on there.
So Jack can feel assured there's not a lawsuit.
Pass that on to Jack. Yes, just say, look, man, Phil concurs with your choice for online store. Check it out. Download all Ingram stuff at iTunes, along with Phil Pritchett and the full band stuff. Or just go to philpritchett.com and buy the whole catalog for $20, man. I'll send you the drop card. Download all 11 albums for $20.
What?
Yes, absolutely.
What a
deal.
Flying
off.
What a value.
Flying off.
You're going to run out.
Oh, man, yeah. The songs are out. They're all out there floating in space. So I'm just kind of like, you know, give me $20. I'll give you a, we make it easy to download right off the site.
There you go.
$20. Pete Codney, we can't thank you enough for being in here. Thanks for bringing the good coffee. Thanks for bringing the pastries. Guy, he walks into the studio. We have other recording studios and offices here at Trinidad. The whole staff just comes out and applauds and embraces Pete whenever he comes over. He brings snacks for everyone, pastries, fresh coffee. It just lights up our day.
You know, Phil, that's my quest in life, to try to light up people's days.
I know it, man. That's why you're such a frequent contributor here on the podcast.
Always,
we appreciate
always
it.
Glad to contribute.
Thanks for coming in today, man. Go check out Jack, and stay tuned here on the podcast. We got more coming. Where I think next week, man, we're going to get with our friend Kurt South and his bass player, Will Hobbs, to talk a little about Lyle Lovett and other issues and things like that. So stay tuned for that next week. Until then, my name is Phil Pritchett. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We'll see you soon.